ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 सर्वत्र
अनभिस्नेह
तत् प्राप्य शुभ अशुभम न अभिनन्दति न वेष्टि तस्य प्रज्ञा
प्रतिष्ठिता
यक्षवाक्यानि विष्णेहस् तत् प्राप्य शुभाशुभम् नाभिनन्दति न वेष्टि तस्य प्रज्ञा
प्रतिष्ठिता
यक्षवचनविष्णेहस् तत् प्राप्य शुभाशुभम् नाभिनन्दति न द्वेष्टि तस्य प्राज्ञा
प्रतिष्ठिता
यक्षवचनविष्णेहस् तत् प्राप्य शुभाशुभम् नाभिनन्दति न द्वेष्टि तस्य प्रज्ञा
प्रतिष्ठिता
Yeah.
Sarvatra,
everywhere.
Anabhisneha,
without affection.
Tat,
that.
Tat,
that.
Prapya,
achieving.
Shubha,
good.
Ashubham,
evil.
Na,
never.
Abhinandati,
praises.
Na,
never.
Dveshti,
envies.
Tasya,
his.
Pragya,
perfect knowledge.
Pratishtita,
fixed.
Translation.
In the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. Again, in the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. Purport. There is always some upheaval in the material world which may be good or evil. One who is not agitated by such material upheavals, who is unaffected by good and evil, is to be understood to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. As long as one is in the material world, there is always the possibility of good and evil, because this world is full of duality. But one who is fixed in Krishna consciousness is not affected by good and evil, because he is simply concerned with Krishna, who is all good absolute. Such consciousness in Krishna situates one in a perfect transcendental position called, technically, samadhi. Yak sabatrana bishnehas tatta prapya subhasubham navi nandati nadveshti tasya pragya patishtata. In the material world, one who is affected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. Om Agyanati Marandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Taksho Unmiditam Niena Tasmai Shri Gunadaya Namaha Hukam Karoti Vachamu Pangum Bangayate Karim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Shri Gunanatananam Nama Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitya Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Sanyavari Vasta Chade Sitarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhara Har Shri Vasudevi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Panchakalpa Tulubhyascha Kripa Sindhudeva Cha Patitana Bhavani Vyo Vaishnava Cha You've said a Bhagavatam stance today? Do you have a set of Bhagavatam stanzas? Can someone get me a sixth canto? Sixth canto, I think it's 17th chapter. I think it's only one more. 17th chapter. So, in this verse, Krishna is speaking about the person who we also described in the previous verse as a Stita Dimuni, sage of steady mind, one who's unaffected by upheavals in this world, whether it be good or evil. Prabhupada speaks about the nature of the material world in the commentary, that there was always some duality in this material world, whether it be good or evil, happiness and distress, honor and dishonor. And he says as long as one is in the material world, there's always the possibility of good and evil because this world is full of duality. I wanted to read something I remember from the sixth canto. And whereas in the prayers of Chituketu Maharaj, he talks about how Krishna creates these dualities in the material world for the living entity, according to the desires of the living entities. Tasya kaschid dayata patipo nigyati bandhur naparo nacha sva samasya savartra niranjanasya suke naraga kuta eva rosha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is equally disposed toward all living entities. Therefore, no one is very dear to him, no one is a great enemy for him, no one is his friend, and no one is his relative. Being unattached to the material world, he has no affection for so-called happiness or hatred for so-called distress. The two terms, happiness and distress, are relative. Since the Lord is always happy, for him there is no question of distress. Tatapi tachchakti visarga esham sukhaya dukhaya hita hitaya bandhaya mokshaya Cham Rityu Janmano Sharirinam Samsmitaye Akalpate. Although the Supreme Lord is unattached to our happiness and distress according to karma, and although no one is his enemy or favorite, he creates pious and impious activities through the agency of his material potency. Thus, for the continuation of the materialistic way of life, he creates happiness and distress, good fortune and bad, bondage and liberation, birth and death. Prabhupada explains in the commentary here. He says, although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate doer of everything in His original transcendental existence, He is not responsible for the happiness and distress or bondage and liberation of the conditioned souls. These are due to the results of the fruitive activities of the living entities within this material world. By the order of a judge, one person is released from jail and another is imprisoned. But the judge is not responsible for the distress and happiness of these different people, for the distress and happiness of these different people is due to their own activities. Although the government is ultimately the supreme authority, the justice is administered by the departments of the government, and the government is not responsible for the individual judgments. Therefore, the government is equal to all the citizens. Similarly, the Supreme Lord is neutral to everyone, but for the maintenance of law and order, His supreme government has various departments which control the activities of the living entities. Another example given in this regard is that lilies open or close because of the sunshine, and thus the bumblebees enjoy or suffer. But the sunshine and the sun globe are not responsible for the happiness and distress of the bumblebees. So these verses explain how ultimately Krishna creates pious and impious activities through the agency of His material potency, and thus for the continuation of those who are interested in the materialistic way of life, He creates happiness and distress, good fortune and bad, bondage and liberation, birth and death. And the example Prabhupada gives is like the sunshine. The sunshine causes the lilies to open and close, and the bumblebees suffer when the lilies are closed. But it cannot be said that the sunshine is directly responsible for the suffering of the bumblebees. In the same way, although the Supreme Lord creates the dualities of the material world, He creates the dualities because the living entity, Prabhupada gives that example, when one is facing the sun, everything is bright. When one turns away from the sun, he sees his shadow. He sees darkness. But as long as one is facing the sun, there's no shadow between himself and the sun. In order to see shadow, he has to turn his back on the sun. So Prabhupada gives the same example to help us understand that as long as one faces Krishna, Krishna Surya Sammaya Haya Andhakara Yahan Krishna Tahanaya Mayari Arikara. Krishna is like the sunshine, Maya is like darkness. Wherever there is sunshine, there cannot be darkness. Similarly, wherever there is Krishna consciousness and the influence of the Lord's external energy cannot take place. So when we turn away from Krishna, then, of course, there's the material energy, the separated material energy, which appears to act independent from the Lord, although Krishna says, Maya Dakshina Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam, material nature works according to my direction. But for the living entity who turns away from Krishna, it appears to act independent from the Lord. And thus the living entity, by turning away, he sees the dualities of this material world. There's a verse in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, I oftentimes quote it, I like to quote it, it's a very good analogy. Bear with me, it's a long verse. Although the duality of the material world does not ultimately exist, the conditioned soul experiences it as real under the influence of his conditioned intelligence. This imaginary experience of a world separate from Krishna can be compared to the acts of dreaming and desiring. When a person dreams of something desirable or horrible, when the conditioned soul dreams of something desirable and horrible, or when he daydreams of something he would like to have or he would like to avoid, he creates a reality that has no experience beyond his imagination. The tendency of the mind is to accept and reject things on the basis of sense gratification. Therefore, the intelligent person should control the mind, restricting it from the tendency of seeing things separate from Krishna. And when the mind is such controlled, one becomes completely fearless. This is the whole verse. It's just a quote. I happen to memorize it. It's very... because it's very... very descriptive, in one sense, helping us to understand. He says, the conditioned soul creates a reality that has no experience, that has no existence beyond his own imagination. And he gives, in the verse of this Bhagavatam verse, the example that's given, just like a person, the conditioned soul dreams of something desirable or horrible. We can all relate to dreams. We may have a very wonderful dream. And sometimes in the middle of our wonderful dream, we may just wake up. And all in a wonderful dream, we may be dreaming we're king, or wealthy, or we have whatever it may be. And then we feel very good, but when we wake up and we realize it's only a dream, then we're sad. It was only a dream. Or we may dream of something horrible. Everyone can relate to that. Sometimes you may have a terrible dream. You're in terrible anxiety. Something's about to happen. And whatever it may be. And you wake up. And when you wake up from the dream, you realize, oh, it was only a dream. I'm happy. So one experiences happiness and sadness. But what reality is there to the happiness and sadness? Because it's only connected to a dream. So this verse explains that the conditioned soul experiences the duality of the material world, the happiness and distress, but it has no connection with reality. It's connected to the night dream and the daydream. The night dream is the phenomena we just described. The daydream, he daydreams of something he would like to have or something he would like to avoid. That is the daydream. During the daydream, we're happy in anticipation and fulfillment of our endeavors to achieve some fruit of gain, our endeavors to achieve some fruit, some result in the future. And it gives us the impetus, the inspiration, and kind of sustains us because of that expectation of the fruit at some point in the future. So we experience some happiness from that, or at least incentive. Maybe not be happiness, but at least we're not feeling distress. And then when there's distress, we try to avoid it. We try to avoid it by averting some, you know, so many different ways we always try to avoid distress. Prahlad Maharaj explains in the 7th canto of the Bhagavatam, in the material world, every materialist endeavors for happiness, and he tries to mitigate his distress, and therefore he acts accordingly. Actually, however, one cannot be happy as long as he endeavors for happiness, because as soon as he makes his endeavors for happiness, immediately he creates his conditions for distress in the future. So, Prahlad Maharaj very clearly explains, in the material world, everyone is endeavoring for happiness and trying to mitigate his distress, and therefore he's acting accordingly. Everyone is motivated. What's going to make me happy? How am I going to avoid distress? But because it's separate from Krishna, whatever happiness they may achieve, although temporarily beneficial, as Prahlad Maharaj also explains in his prayers, Balasya Neha Sharanam Pitaro Nishinga Natasya Chagadam Udanfiti Majito. Now, he describes in this verse that because of a bodily conception of life, embodied souls, neglected and not cared for by you, cannot do anything for their betterment. Whatever remedies they may accept, although perhaps temporarily beneficial, temporarily beneficial, they're certainly impermanent. He gives the example, just as a boat in the water cannot rescue a drowning man, just as an expert physician in medicine cannot relieve a suffering patient, and just as parents cannot protect the child. Prahlad Maharaj gives this example. He gives the example just like medicine and physician and medicine cannot relieve a suffering patient. He just uses this as an example for the bodied souls who are in the due to the conditioned mentality, embodied souls neglected, they cannot do anything for their benefit. They may become temporarily relieved or temporarily happy. And he gives the example just like a person may be suffering from a terrible disease. And then all of a sudden, they look for the best doctor comes, and the best doctor says, yes, there's some medicine, I'm going to get this medicine, I'm going to administer this medicine to you, and certainly we should look for some signs of success. In fact, I even remember my dear departed godbrother, Sridhar Maharaj, when I was with him in Mayapur, how he was not deluded by this. I remember when he was in Mayapur, and then one godbrother named Tridandi from Italy, he said, there's a doctor in South India, I know, Maharaj, I know he can cure you. And, Maharaj in usual. He said, all right, let him try. And this devotee, he went all the way down to South India to find this doctor. He brought him back. The doctor said, 3 weeks. 3 weeks, if you take my medicine, you'll immediately see some dramatic change. So Sridhar Maharaj, he willingly accepted, but you could see, In fact, he was not convinced. He didn't place that much faith in it. In fact, when I called him because I left Mayapur the week before he departed, and I called him from Kiev, and it happened to be the night before he departed. And Maharaj was saying to me, He said, Maharaj, you're going to have to preach to me to convince me it's worth staying here in this material world. He said, all these remedies, they're not doing anything. He says, I think Krishna, he actually is saying, speaking just like this, I think Krishna's set the time for me to go. And he says, if everyone wants me to stay, you're going to have to preach to me and convince me that I should go on endeavoring, he said, because I don't see any reason why I should. And he was speaking really openly, honestly with me. But, this, all the devotees were thinking, and in fact, we left Mayapur the week early. I left Mayapur the week early, and a lot of godbrothers left the week early. But Sridhar Maharaj had this way of, diminishing the importance of his departure. I walked in the room. Maharaj said to me, what are you doing here? Get out of here. And he said, go to Moscow. Don't you know I'm going to be cured? I'll see you in Moscow. He kicked me out. He said, just why is everybody staying here? You go on, do your service. You should be preaching, not giving me so much attention. I don't know why. What made me think of that point is just, I was using that example from the Bhagavatam. Prahlad Maharaj says, even if you have an expert physician in the best medicine, you may experience temporary happiness. Oh, I've got the best physician and the best medicine. But that doesn't mean you're not going to die. So Prahlad Maharaj uses that as an example, that you may be temporarily happy. You may feel some temporary benefit by getting the best physician and the best medicine in your room. But it still doesn't mean you're not going to die. Sridhar Maharaj I brought him up because he seemed somewhat convinced that, this is just another attempt to keep my body going. And he was willing to do it because the devotee so much wanted wanted him to do it. But he's pretty detached. In fact, one night, I remember, I was with Maharaj every night. I was going to his room and having kirtans every night. In his room, he begged me to please come and to chant for him. And just one thing he did, it was just, it really amazed me. I don't know how I got on this subject of Shidamara. I don't know. Just because I happened to remember him spontaneously thinking about this example. But one, I thought I'd tell, it's a nice story. One night I couldn't go to chant in his room. And I was going pretty, it was just during the GBC meetings. And Maharaj at that time, he was bedridden. He could, you know, he was in the bed practically the whole time. And he couldn't get up during the kirtans. He used to have to lie down and he would dance with his arms. He would put his arms up in the air, dance like that. And so one night I had a terrible headache after GBC meeting. Terrible headache. And I used to go just shortly after. But I wrote a note and I sent it to Maharaj's room. I said, Maharaj, please forgive me. And I am not going to be able to make it to the meeting. And I explained I had a really bad headache. And I said, I promise I'll be there tomorrow night. So as I was walking back to my room, I was thinking, shh, you know, I've got a headache. But look at what Shuddha Maharaj is going through. And I'm just like, I felt really bad. So I decided to turn around and go back to Maharaj's room and have kirtan. There were many devotees there. It's not like it wouldn't go on without me. But somehow Maharaj, when he first arrived in Mayapur, and I saw him, he embraced him. He asked me if I would come and chant for him every night. So I kept that fixed in my mind. So on this night, I had already sent a message, and then I turned around and I decided I'm going to go back and at least chant with the rest of the devotees. When I opened up the door of the room, Shri Maharaj looked up to me and he saw me coming. And then he called me. He said, come. He told me to sit on the bed next to him. And then he sat up. He asked Mayapur, he said, give me for some tiger balm. And he started massaging my head for about 30 minutes. Really? Like he was a completely healthy man. And I was thinking, here is a devotee who's in so much pain, lying in his bed, and he's thinking about my headache. He's thinking about my headache. And he was just like massaging my head for 30 minutes. He wouldn't let me go. I said, this is such a personality, like, you know, such valuable jewel we have in our midst. No wonder he was willing to try on our behalf to stay. You know, and I remember another night we had kirtan. Maharaj was lying down. His body, you know, racked with so much, you know, poisons and toxins in his body. I think that was the night the doctor came to, you know, to drain the fluids from his body. The doctor came in and we thought he was going to leave that night, but he was really sick. His body was feverish. And the doctor came over and started feeling the fluids in his body. And Shri Maharaj turned to his brother and said, it's a boy. And then the next and somehow he got through. All the devotees were coming in. We're having kirtan. And he got through that night. His fever was subsided. And the next night we had kirtan. Maharaj got up after the kirtan. He sat up and gave a lecture to all the devotees in the room about how we're not these bodies. It was probably one of the most profound lectures I've ever heard about how we're not these bodies. And, you know, we hear it all the time, you know, and we think, oh, yeah, I've heard that before. But, you know, coming from the mouth of Shita Maharaj at that particular time, it's like, you know, this, you could see he was not bewildered. Dhirastata namuyati. He was not bewildered by, you know, what he was confronting. And yet he would always deny his Krishna consciousness. You know, saying, I'm not Krishna conscious, I need all of you to help me be Krishna conscious. But it's the only way to transcend the dualities of this world, birth and death, is Krishna consciousness. And somehow, he seemed to have very successfully transcended it. And, in his detachment from all that was going on. So, to transcend dualities of the material world, it's described, as we quoted in that verse, that the living entity, he has to control the mind, restricting it from the tendency of seeing things separate from Krishna. And when the mind is thus controlled, then one actually experiences fearlessness. So, Bhajagure Manashi Nanda Nandana Bhayajana Govinda Reyes, we oftentimes sing in the prayer of Govinda Das, with your mind, please meditate on the lotus feet of the divine son of Nanda, because by meditation upon him one becomes fearless. If there's no Krishna consciousness, then we're going to have to be faced with the dualities of the material world, which Krishna has created for the living entities who turn away from him. And just as we experience happiness and distress in relationship to the dream, which has no reality beyond our own imagination, we also experience happiness and distress in relationship and distress in relationship to the daydream. The daydream is anticipating of something we would like to have or something we would like to avoid. Think of so many daydreams that we have of how we think that things, if we obtain some fruit, some goal, some cherished desire, it will make us happy. But then when we actually obtain it, then in order to maintain it, there's so much distress. In order to maintain it. And it doesn't come out exactly the way we anticipated. I mean, so many times, so many of my godbrothers back in the 70s, you know, it was a time when a lot of devotees were starting to get married. And he would tell me, it was sort of like a new thing, and when more and more devotees started to get married, and everyone was thinking, yeah, getting married was the solution. And then all the things that started to come, unexpected distresses. I didn't think it was going to be this way. And then it was nice while the daydream was there, in anticipation of, oh yes, I'll be able to settle down there. But then there's so many distresses that come, things that we try to avoid. And our mind gets so filled up with anticipation of happiness and avoiding suffering. But Bhagavatam states, Tasyaiva heto prayate dukho vido, talabhyate dukkha danyata sukham. What is it? Kalena savatra kabira nangasam. I forget the whole phrase. Persons who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined should not endeavor for that happiness which is obtainable by traveling to the highest planet, Brahmaloka, down to the lowest planet, Patalaloka. Because as far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment is concerned, it can be obtained automatically in due course of time. Just as in due course of time, One obtains miseries without asking for them. So the intelligent person knows that, why should I endeavor for the happiness available from highest planet Brahmaloka down to Patala? It's going to come automatically in due course of time, just as distress comes in due course of time. Nobody asks for it. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to make plans this morning to suffer. Let me plan my set day. But it comes. Well, of course, some days it doesn't come. And when it doesn't come, we think we're happy. Happiness is not suffering. As long as I'm not suffering, I'm happy. That's right. Such an illusion. Because as long as I enjoy that state of not suffering, I'm preparing myself for future suffering. Right? Prabhupada talks with, tells that story about the prince. May you live a long life. You can enjoy now your princely life, but may you live a long life, because when you die so much, you're enjoying all your previous pious activities. Was it prince? May you live a long life, O Brahmachari. May you die now. Saintly person, may you live and not live or die, doesn't make any difference. Butcher, don't live, don't die. Butcher, don't live, because by your living you're causing so much suffering, and don't die either. Because when you die, so much suffering. So the prince was, may you live a long time. So we may try to become happy by not suffering. But it's an illusion. Because suffering will come of its own accord. The intelligent person endeavors for neither. He knows that by endeavoring to please Krishna, by remembering Krishna, then he can transcend happiness and distress, honor, dishonor. But Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, for one who has conquered the mind, super soul has reached, for he has attained tranquility. For such a man, heat and cold, happiness and distress, honor and dishonor, they're all the same. Conquers the mind. If one has controlled his mind, it's his best friend. One who fails to control his mind, it's his worst enemy. And then he goes on to say that for one who conquers the mind, he reaches the super soul, and transcends the dualities of the material world. There's a verse in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada quotes it in Chaitanya Charitamrita in the story of Sanatana Goswami. Anything not conceived in relationship to Krishna is understood to be illusion. None of the illusions, either uttered by words or conceived in the mind, are reality. Since illusions are not reality, there is no difference between what we think is good and what we think is bad. For the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such speculations do not exist. For Krishna, he's transcendental to these things. And then, it goes the word, Dvaite Bhadra Bhadra Gyan Sabha Mano Dharma E Bala E Manda E Sabha Brahma. In the material world, any conception, this is good, this is bad, it's all mental speculation. Therefore, to say this is good, this is bad, all a mistake. And what does he use the word? Mano Dharma. The religion of the mind. Dvaite Bhadra Bhadra Gyan Sabha Mano Dharma. It is the religion of the mind. This is good, this is bad. We're thinking in terms of the mind's projections. What will make me happy? Or what will be a source of my distress? But actually here, in this verse, Krishna is clearly stating that in the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. There is always some upheaval in the material world, which may be good or evil. So the dualities exist. They do exist. The conditioned soul experiences a real due to its conditioned intelligence, which is seeing things separate from Krishna. Just as Prabhupada gave that analogy. When you turn away from the sun, you see evil. You see darkness. But as long as one is remembering Krishna, and he says, Prabhupada says, Krishna is all good absolute. Is it? One who is fixed in Krishna consciousness is not affected by good and evil because he is simply concerned with Krishna, who is all good absolute. Sometimes devotees, they have a difficult time. They say, why did Krishna make suffering? They don't understand. Krishna, he's God, he's perfect. You know, he could have made it so there's no suffering. So why why did he create, as we read in that verse in the Bhagavatam, he creates pious and impious activities through the agency of his material potency. Thus, for the continuation of the materialistic way of life, he creates happiness and distress, good fortune and bad, bondage and liberation, birth and death. Why? So Prabhupada answered that in the commentary, that purport. That's why I read that first. That the Lord is not directly responsible for the suffering of the living entities. Just as the sun is not directly responsible for the sufferings of the bees when the lilies open and close. The sun is not directly responsible. And he gives the example also of the government. The government is not responsible for the individual judgments. The government is equal to all citizens. Similarly, Supreme Lord is neutral to everyone, but for the maintenance of law and order, the Supreme Government has various departments which control the activities of the living entities. The Lord is seated as though neutral. He's seated neutral, just as the judge. Judge is neutral when he makes his decisions, but it's according to the behavior of the defendant in court. So the Supreme Lord is also, he's neutral, seated as the Super Soul, the Lord within the heart, to witness and to give sanction. The living entity has his desires for independence, and therefore the Lord witnesses and gives sanction. Prabhupada even gives the example, like a parent who has a persistent child. Did I tell that story about Prabhupada and with his son in the fan last time I was here? I didn't? No. Papa tells that story about his son when he was a householder. He said his son was very persistent. He wanted to put his finger in the fan. He would always walk up to the fan and he would turn to Prabhupada. His son would put his finger close to Prabhupada. Prabhupada would never let him do it. Although the son knew he couldn't do it without his father's permission. So he'll walk up to the wizard. No, it's no fan. Anyways. And he would never put his finger in the fan. So, because Prabhupada said no, but he was like always so persistent. And one time the next door neighbor was in the house, he was observing all of this. And the son would go up again, no. So the neighbor said, pull out the plug and let him put his finger in the fan. So Prabhupada pulled out the plug and the son went. Put his finger in the fan and jumped away. Prabhupada tells the story. He used the example of the living entity in the material world. His persistence. And the super soul doesn't want, but he is the witness and he gives sanction. If the living entity is persistent in his desires and he wants to enjoy, then the Lord gives sanction. Okay, you can enjoy. It's not that the Lord wants it because he sanctions it. Not a blade of grass can move without the will of the Lord. Not a blade of grass can... Nothing can happen without the sanction of the Lord. So he gives sanction. But it's by our misuse of our independence. By our choice. So Prabhupada is using that same example here in this commentary, that the suffering in the material world, good and bad, good fortune and bad, bondage and liberation, birth and death, is created by the Lord. But just as Prabhupada gives the example that the government would like to use all of its money for education and for advancing society, but still the government has to spend money on prison houses. Why? Because they're criminals. So, because the living entities are misusing their independence, therefore, the Lord creates facilities for the living entities to continue the materialistic way of life. But when they turn to Krishna, then in Krishna consciousness, Krishna consciousness is the only way to actually transcend the dualities of the material world and to transcend the the upheavals which Prabhupada explains will come automatically in the course of events of this material world. Krishna Surya Samaya Hayandakara. Therefore every day we should endeavor somehow to remember Krishna, speak about Krishna, and to try our best to overcome the dualities of materialistic life, which will only be ultimately a source of suffering. Even though we may temporarily experience some happiness, the evidence we use in these verses from the Bhagavatam are clear evidence that such happiness is only a foundation for future distress. Intelligent person should understand it. What is that verse by Lord Rishabhdev? Nunam pamatak kurute vikrama yarindya piti apnanti. Yes? What is that verse? Nunam pamatak kurute vikrama. Fifth canto Bhagavatam. Persons who are pamatak, mad after sense enjoyment, they do not understand that all the suffering that they're experiencing in this life is simply due to all of their attempts for happiness in previous lives. Yet they're still addicted to all kinds of sinful activities, mad after sense gratification, thinking that it will relieve their suffering in this life. But actually, they don't see that their attempts to counteract the effects. Is that verse also in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam? Narada Muni is speaking to King Puchini Barhashat. He says, nobody can counter the effects a fruit of activities by manufacturing another activity which is devoid of Krishna consciousness. Right? He gives the example. It's just like a person who is awakening from who awakens from a bad dream into an hallucination. He gives that example. So similarly, a person who thinks you can counteract the effects of fruit of activities by manufacturing another activity which is devoid of Krishna consciousness. It's not possible. We're not counteracting effects of fruit of activities. We're just simply creating more suffering. It's like shifting the burden of a big shoulder, of a weight on our shoulder from one to the other. Still carrying the burden. The same way we still carry the burden of our reactions of upper up the karma, which will in due course of time bear fruit. So we try to counteract it by another fruit activity, and there's more upper up the karma. So therefore, what does Narada Muni recommend? Therefore, just as a person who has a bad dream, he awakens into an hallucination. If you have a bad dream, you're about to be killed, and you wake up, and the room is totally pitch black, and you look and you see the curtain moving, you think there's somebody behind the curtain who's about to kill you. So Narada Muni says, he gives this example and says that, no, actually the only way to wake up is one has to wake up to Krishna consciousness. And this is the only way to counteract the effects of fruitive activities, is to wake up to Krishna consciousness. So, any questions?
And this works like that. yes. bad. But in the spiritual world, like, there are no dualities. That's everything. It's like everybody is Krishna conscious. So where does that desire come from, which is that desire to enjoy devoid of Krishna or independent of Krishna? Because there is no duality there, as we see that in the material world, which is cause of all the suffering for us. But in the spiritual world, where we all originally came from, there is no such duality which can cause which can cause us some desires to enjoy.
Yes, that leaves us to think that it's very difficult to fall from the spiritual world, doesn't it? There's no Maya. Spiritual world. So how can one become attracted by it?
Desires to enjoy without Krishna.
Yeah. It leads us to think that actually, although Prabhupada says we were one with Krishna, we were with Krishna, I mean. What is that verse? Jivira Srupoya Krishna Michitas Krishna Shakti Veda Veda Prakash. Living entities Tatashta. Tatashta means he's on that border. The Jiva living entities coming from Mahavishnu. They're on the border. And therefore, they are given that choice. But that choice, you know, we understand that choice has to be there. Prabhupada would give the example that one to love, that one has to be voluntary. Otherwise, how can there be love without voluntary spirit? So where does it come from? It comes from Krishna. Just as Krishna is completely independent, the living entities also must have independence. But the difference is that Krishna is completely independent and we have tiny independence. And that tiny independence is we can choose Krishna or we can choose illusory energy. And from the Tathashta, platform of Tathashta Shakti, that choice is there. And when one makes his choices, since time immemorial, there is no beginningless karma, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes, Jiva Dharma, very difficult to conceive or to understand by our tiny minds. But we have to understand that ultimately it comes from Krishna. Just as we read that good fortune and bad fortune, happiness and distress, the dualities, he creates these dualities. It comes from Krishna. We created, yes, by turning, we gave the example, by turning away from Krishna, we see our shadow. Just as, but Krishna says in the Bhagavatam to Lord Brahma in the four nutshell verses, he says, Brahma, that whatever you see of any value, if it has no connection with me, you should know it to be my illusory energy, or that reflection which appears in the darkness. So, point is that that ability to see separate from Krishna is also coming from Krishna. If Krishna says that's my separated material energy, so whatever you see of any value, if you see it of a value, but you can't see how it's connected to me, then why is it valuable? Something is valuable when it's connected to the Lord. That's what gives its real value. But if we think it's valuable, but we don't see its connection to Krishna, It's due to our perverted, our distorted perception of the value of that particular object. We think it's value because I will derive happiness from this object. And therefore it's valuable. But Krishna says, if you see it valuable, but you don't see it's connected to me, it's my illusory energy. It's still coming from me. So Krishna creates the illusory energy, the ability to see separate from him. But it's not that he imposes upon us. We always have the freedom to choose. Somewhere, at some time immemorial, we made a wrong choice. But Prabhupada said, you know, when the house is burning down, don't bother to ask who lit the fire. If you know the house is burning down.
Should you consider the illusory energy of Krishna is evil or bad? Or should you consider that it's good?
In one sense, it's good. Just like the example is, if you put your hand into fire, fire burns, but it's good. Because if it didn't, you lose your hand. But because it burns, you take your hand out of the fire.
All right? Fire is not bad.
But you'll avoid losing your hand because it hurts. So you'll take it out. So the suffering in this material world, of course, you know, there's so much suffering. But in one sense, if it helps us to turn to Krishna, unfortunately, most conditioned souls think that suffering in the material world is something I don't want, it's not my nature to suffer, and therefore let me enjoy separate from Krishna. And therefore we describe the mentality of such materialistic persons. They endeavor for happiness, separate from Krishna, and they try to counteract the distress, and therefore they act accordingly. And therefore they become caught up and tangled in a network of reactions, birth after birth after birth. But for the intelligent person who understands that yes, this material world. And in fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in the Bhakti Tattva Viveka, he says that the living entity's sukriti, or his qualification for actually beginning devotional service, is a result of some sukriti, of something in the past. And he says that for many, it begins when the living entity, due to prolonged endeavors to enjoy, but being unfulfilled. Unfulfilled desires are prolonged suffering. Both unfulfilled desires over prolonged time or prolonged suffering over prolonged... Then what happens is that a spirit of renunciation is awakened within that person's heart. A spirit of detachment. But just being detached is not sufficient. One who tries to become detached due to because of prolonged suffering, you know, he's... As we know, Yenyi Ravan Daksha Vamukta Mani Nastvayasta Bhavada Vashuddha Buddhya, one who tries to simply become detached from this world, but he doesn't take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, he'll fall down from that position. Because real shelter is taking shelter of Krishna. So he says, but a person's sukriti is usually is derived as a result of prolonged suffering or prolonged unfulfilled desires. And then what happens is when a person actually achieves that state of a spirit of detachment, if by good fortune, and this again is sukriti, it's called bhakti-mukhi sukriti. There's different types of sukriti. There's called moksha-mukhi sukriti, bhogan-mukhi sukriti, and bhakti-mukhi sukriti. Bhogan-mukhi sukriti means as a result of some pious activities, one gets bhogan. He gets opportunity for some enjoyment. Moksha Mukhi Sukriti is the result of some Sukriti in the past. He gets opportunity, facility for liberation, detachment, but it's not permanent. But Bhaktun Mukhi Sukriti means he gets the opportunity to associate with devotee. By good fortune, he associates with a devotee, then his faith is awakened, that ultimately the ultimate goal is devotional service to Krishna. And then what happens? Shraddha takes birth in his heart, faith. And when that Shraddha takes birth in its heart, it's like the birth of a newborn baby girl. When a newborn baby girl takes her birth, the parents are always very careful to protect the baby girl from excessive heat, from excessive cold, from hunger, from thirst, and from dangerous creatures. In the same way, when Shraddha takes birth in the heart of a living entity, faith, which is a resulted by association with a devotee, just as a mother protects the child from dangerous elements, so in the same way, the devotees protect the person who's come in contact with devotional service from karma and jnana. What is that? Rupa Goswami describes that these two, bhukti and mukti, pishachi hiri vartate, they're compared to be like two witches would hunt one like a ghost. As long as these two desires are there within the heart, the desire for bhukti, sense enjoyment, and liberation, one will never be able to understand or taste the bliss of devotional service. So the Vaishnavas, they protect that shraddha, that faith, and they nourish. Just as a mother nourishes the child and helps give the child strength, the Vaishnavas nourish also the faith in devotional service to Krishna. So that's the birth of bhakti, shraddha, by association with the Vaishnava. So since time immemorial, we've actually had to face the consequences of our past turning away from Krishna, and then prarabdha karma, aprarabdha karma, so much suffering. But then association with, of course, Prabhupada also explains that even if the spirit of detachment is not awakened, he said if by good fortune one comes in contact with a devotee and just hears with a little faith, and Nectar of Devotion explains that. So it's also explained by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the Madhurya Kadambani. He said faith arises from two sources. One is due to contact with devotional service in a previous life, and another is due to the forceful preaching of Vaishnava in this life. So either way, somehow a faith, that shraddha is awakened. That is the birth of bhakti within the heart, like a newborn baby girl. And that is our only way to get out of the entanglement. So then we have choice. We have real choice. I think it was Rafi Dainanda Maharaj gives the example in the Bhagavatam 11th canto. He said, just like if you get on a plane from New York to Los Angeles, when you get on a plane from New York to Los Angeles, on the plane, you can go to the front of the plane, you go to the back of the plane, but you're still going to Los Angeles. So you have some choice. Right? Some choice is there. Living entity always has, the living entity, when he has to accept the results of his past karmic activities, and if he's not surrendered to Krishna, then he still has some choice, but he has to accept the results of that karma. So once you step on that plane, you're going to Los Angeles. Even though you can go to the front of the plane, you go to the back of the plane, you go to the galley and get a drink, you go to the toilet, but you go to Los Angeles. Of course, unless the plane is shut down. Anyways, I don't know. Forgive me if I went off on a tangent. Somehow these things came to my mind. It's probably late. I should probably stop. What do you usually have our
team? Any last question, anybody?
One short question. If we're ever able to be back in Krishna, what's the chance, since we're marginal? And also, how will we remember this material world, and what's the chance that we may mess up again and come back? Will we retain a little memory of that's a place I don't want to go?
Prabhupada gave the example. He said, when the child puts his hand on the burn of the stove, he won't do it again. He'll remember. Somehow I remember. Do you ever hear
me? He also said that free will is still there.
Free will is still there, but he won't misuse it. He said.
And the Bhagavad Gita said that in other places they said, like in some walks they'll say, but you can't do it again. So I gotta be always gotta be careful.
Yeah, the potential is always there.
Yeah.
Always there. Because we always have independence. So therefore the potential is always there. But Krishna also says, when one goes there, he never comes back. Janma kama cha medavya. Even you wait to tatva for the apunaja. Was that, there was also a, what is that verse? Tad dhamma paramamama. Supreme abode is unmanifested, infallible, the supreme destination. When one goes there, he never comes back. Tad dhamma paramamama. That is my supreme abode. Avyakta akshara. Something like that. I forgot my Bhagavad Gita verses. I should be studying with you every day. Go back on the road and look. That's where I learned all my Bhagavad Gita on second time. I remember standing in the parking lot distributing books with my car.
I'm writing a verse with
the
car.
All the Bhagavad Gita shlokas in parking lots.
Question by Vijay Krishna Prabhu. Another regular question is Manish Prabhu. Is there a question to him? Okay. So, only Vijay Krishna Prabhu then.
Maharaj, is the material nature, is the nature, is it a material or a transcendental or spiritual? The nature that we see, the flowers, peacocks.
The example, Prabhupada, flowers and peacocks? You mean in this world?
In this world, yes.
Everything in this world is temporary. It's real, but it's temporary. It's real because it's Krishna's energy. Etadyonini bhutani savad ichipad hariya ahankritsnasya jagatat pabhavak palayastata. Krishna says all that is material and all that is spiritual, you should know for certain on both its origin and dissolution. So it's Krishna's energy. So therefore it's real. But the difference is here it's temporary. Whereas in the spiritual world, it's transcendental, which means there's no temporary nature.
Because in this verse it says, the Siddhapragna neither praises nor despises it. If this nature, if it is treated as a material nature, I mean, we can understand if he doesn't despise anything, the bad in this nature, that's understood. But how can he not praise the beauty, because it's created by the Lord.
But that, he's speaking about for the person who's, he doesn't praise it for its material value. Like something may be very materially good, like the iPhones came out in the market today. Wow, that's great, I gotta get one. So you say the iPhone is created by, not by Stephen Jobs, it's been created by Krishna, who gave man the intelligence to create it. So, but he doesn't praise it for its material value.
That's not specific about nature, because it's created, man is not created.
So. Ultimately, everything is coming from Krishna. He sees it. He praises it in terms of his connection with the Lord.
And the Prabhupada also says that if you cannot develop that, just start seeing this material world without Swarup, just everything comes from Krishna, that will give connection to Krishna.
Yeah, just like the drunkard who thinks that when Krishna says, I am the pure taste of water, when he drinks wine, he thinks, oh, this is Krishna then. He gives his devotional service.
Okay, we're going to have a bhajan maharaj before it's too late.
If you want, it's not too late for me. I think Maharaj, you go to. Okay. Abhishek, you'll give me a ride home?
Of course.
How long will you stay?
A little while, just maybe a half hour.
You should say too much.
I've been over, but I will tell you at 9 o'clock to leave. Now to you.
I'll just go.
Okay. I think you should keep your regulation also.
I was signaling you earlier, but
and a half hour turned into 45 minutes and turned into an hour.
Okay,
yes, you can give me Vaishnav Sambhu.
Can we hear like the Koda Nitai Kirtan one more time?
Koda Nitai.
Yeah, last time you did and we did it.
Do you have it in the songbook?
I don't think it's in the songbook, but we have the copy and maybe it's in
it's not in here. Right? So we have to do with something that's in here.
Yes, right.
Okay.
You don't have to
object.
No, you're not. I know that. We know that. Can I have a book too,
Chant Bhaja Hunimana?
Yeah,
okay. Who's going to read the translation? Someone can read it? Someone else can read it. Yeah.
You want to read the translation? Bhaja Hunimana?
Yeah, we'll do the translation first, that way we can meditate on it while we're chanting.
Yeah, Bill Prabhu is going to be initiated in 1 month.
Yeah.
Oh man, just worship the love sweet of the son of Nanda, which makes one fearless. Having obtained this rare human birth, cross over this ocean of worldly existence through the association of saintly persons. Both in the day and at night, I remain sleepless, suffering the pains of the heat and cold, the wind and the rain. For a fraction of flickering happiness, I have uselessly served wicked and miserly men. What assurance of real happiness is there in all of one's wealth, youthfulness, sons, and family members? This life is tottering like a drop of water on a lotus petal. Therefore, you should always serve and worship the divine feet of Lord Hari. It is the desire and great longing of Govinda Das to engage himself in the nine processes of bhakti, namely, hearing the glories of Lord Hari and chanting those glories, constantly remembering him and offering prayers to him, serving the Lord's lotus feet, serving the Supreme Lord as a servant, worshipping him with flowers and incense and so forth, serving him as a friend, and completely offering the Lord one's very self.
na 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 na